This CityWire podcast is sponsored by Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust. Scottish Mortgage invests in some of the world's most promising and exceptional companies, from healthcare breakthroughs to electric vehicles to a green energy revolution. Scottish Mortgage takes stakes in businesses shaping our future economy and society. As with any investment, capital is at risk.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Advice Show. From advising clients to practice management, this podcast will give you UK and global insights into the financial planning profession. I'm Chloe, a reporter at New Model Advisor, and today we are talking about subscription-based financial planning and how to make advice more accessible. And to talk about this, I am joined by Chanel Pattinson. Chanel is a chartered financial planner, a podcaster, and the co-founder of Money Means, which is a subscription-based flexible advice service that is aimed at a younger generation of clients. So Chanel, thanks so much for being here and for talking to me about this today. How are you doing?
Yes, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, good. I'm very excited to be talking about this today. So to start off, can you begin by introducing yourself, a little bit about your career and how you co-founded Money Means, how it kind of came together?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you mentioned, I'm a chartered financial planner, which still, I feel like I love to always say it because it was such a hard slog getting through those exams. Yeah, I'm super happy to finally be able to say it. So I'm a chartered financial planner. My dad is a financial planner, has been my whole life. So that's how I got into the industry. It took me a little while to actually realise it is what I wanted to do. Dad was going on for quite a long time that I should give it a go. And I wasn't too sure, but eventually I did. And I thought, you know what, this is really interesting. And I actually really enjoyed doing the exams and becoming a financial planner. And what then happened is I was working for my dad, who is a very traditional financial planner. His clients, his practice is all very traditional. Clients on average are kind of 60-ish, like that kind of age, planning for retirement, inheritance tax planning, all of those sorts of things that the majority of financial planning firms do. I worked in many other firms before I worked with dad, and they all had a very similar clientele. But what happened was I started to put myself on social media and online and talk on podcasts. And I suppose I was accidentally talking to a different audience about what I do and how I do it and talking all things finance in probably a different way that a lot of people had heard before. And I started to attract younger clients. And I'm always like keen to caveat, I'm not talking like super young, I'm just talking like younger than the typical financial planning client. So I started to attract these clients, and I was kind of like, why isn't like nobody really working with these clients? Like, why is nobody targeting them, creating a company that wants to work with them, all of these sorts of things? And I was speaking to them and realizing, and it was kind of like my age, my friends, like that kind of demographic. And I was like, do you know what, like financial planning can really help them and make such a huge difference. And actually starting early like is amazing. You can make such a difference to somebody's life going forward when it comes to money and getting financial planning early. So I kind of got obsessed with this idea of, okay, what does this generation actually want? Because I knew they wanted something different to what the traditional advice model looked like in many different ways. And I did some research on that, which we can talk about separately. But I really started digging deep into what they wanted. So I got super obsessed with this idea about financial planning for the next generation and what they wanted and how they wanted it. And I started thinking about how I was going to do it and building a business plan. And I then spoke at a conference all about what the next generation wanted. And Helena Wardle, the founder of Money Means, was actually in the audience. And she grabbed me afterwards. We sat down and started chatting. And she was like, this is really weird. Like, Money Means is exactly what you're talking about. Like, everything you've just said, like that is what I'm building. And I'm sure you know that, like, it's not a conversation that's often had in the industry. Like, this is quite a new and different idea. So often when I'd be telling people my idea, they'd be like, that's a bit different, not sure if that's going to work. But Helen was like, oh my god, this is what I'm doing too. Like, this is, we are both so in the same mindset of what we're building. And she said, you want to do it together, basically. So at that point we came together. I became a co-founder of Money Means and basically started putting into practice everything that I'd be learning and building in the months prior. So yeah, it's been super exciting.
Yeah, that's great. So can you talk a bit more about as well the sort of business model of MoneyMe? There's a robo side of it and there's the hybrid side. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, for sure. So, when I was thinking about it and researching it, and talking to people, they'd be like, "Oh, that generation, they just want tech, they don't want people." And I was like, I completely disagree. Like, just because it's a younger generation, I think it doesn't mean we don't want human. And actually, when it comes to things like money, which is incredibly emotional and you need support, actually, that you really do need a human then. It doesn't matter how old you are, like you still need a conversation with a human being. So I knew and Helen knew as well that it couldn't be tech only. There had to be a human part of it. And there was lots of other things we thought about and knew that were important. Things like it needed to be a relatable brand. One of the things that when I was researching was what do people want from financial planning? What they're looking for in a company? And what came up the most was relatability. And I think that's incredibly interesting because a lot of financial planning brands aren't relatable to the younger generation. They're just not. Whether that's in the branding, at the demographic of the advisors, like often they aren't relatable. So we knew that was really important to feed into our branding, our messaging, no jargon, keeping it simple, all of these sorts of things. So that was super important. And then also then the subscription basis, again, going back to when I was thinking about working with this next generation, what I was finding was that these individuals, they often didn't have lump sums of money. They usually had obviously regular income. They may have some spare that they can invest or put in their pension, but they often didn't have lump sums of cash or investments. So if you were to do the traditional percentage fees, you wouldn't really make any money because they didn't have a lump sum. And at the end of the day, like it is expensive to run a financial planning business. Sometimes it's really expensive. So understandably, if you're not making any money from that client, it's not great. You have to be able to afford to run your business. So I just knew for the majority of this generation, percentage wouldn't work. And of course, there are more businesses now looking at fixed fees and doing fixed fees. And I just started thinking about subscription. And in my head, I was like, this generation, like, we pay so many subscriptions. Like, I guarantee, like, everybody I ask probably has at least five for different things. It's
absolutely,
just normal. Like to pay a subscription is completely normal. To sign up for a subscription is completely normal. Like I very rarely second guess it. And I rarely pay for stuff now that isn't subscriptions if it's a service. I often don't pay a lump sum. I often pay a subscription. So I was kind of like, surely we could make that work. And it took a lot of research and there's still a lot of things for us to work out in terms of determining what we price at and things like that. But I just felt that we could make this work with a subscription. And that's also important where the tech comes in because things need to be smoother and easier to do, and cost less in certain areas. So we can do a subscription. But I just think if we're going to access this next generation of clients, and then there's a huge amount of individuals who don't or can't get financial planning. I think it's 90% of the UK, so about at least 39 million adults, I think it is, go without financial planning. That's huge. Like that figure is like absolutely massive. And if you think about why aren't they getting financial planning, like I think there's many reasons for that. I think one of them, for example, is usually you need about £50,000 in investment or cash or whatever to be able to access advice in the first place. Like I know if my friends rang around probably 10 financial planning firms, many of them wouldn't give them the time of day. Like that just is a fact. And then that makes sense for that 90% sort of figure. Like that's why people can't get it. And then I think the other part of it is a lot of people also don't feel like they can walk through the door of a financial planning firm. Like clients that I've worked with, people I've spoken to have said, like, I would never walk into a financial planning firm that was like incredibly corporate, like full of older males. That is like, that's a proven fact. That is the demographic of advisors. Like, they were like, I just feel intimidated. I don't feel comfortable. I don't feel like it's for me to be able to walk through that door and sit down and get financial planning. And if we want to be able to work with more individuals and provide more people financial planning, like that needs to change.
Yeah, absolutely. So the figure that you just mentioned, was it 39 million, did you say, that I don't have? And it's people that 39 million people that need it, especially at this moment, right? Because we're in the context of a financial crisis, cost of living crisis, and people are kind of really scared. And, you know, young people are even more vulnerable to this. So it's really kind of important gap in the market that's not really being addressed. Absolutely. And what you mentioned about subscription as well, I mean, I think we're probably the same generation. We're both in our 20s, and it's true that, you know, everything that we do is subscription based. I never would refuse to pay a lump sum for anything, because it's the way that we work. We just have monthly expenses kind of coming out, right? So it makes complete sense. So this so Money Means, the primary sort of target market is younger people, right? A younger generation of clients. Is there any other type of demographic that you would want to kind of target as well?
Not particularly. I think for us, it's important that we're able to help individuals that just haven't been able to access advice before, whether that is because of the relatability access, they don't feel like they could approach a firm, or whether it's the sort of like lump sum of cash, or they couldn't afford the traditional fees, or whatever it is. We just want to make financial planning just generally more accessible. We just think it's incredibly important. As you touched on, like, the world we're in right now, like, it's really hard, and like, it couldn't be a more perfect time for people to be able to get help. And I think a lot of people, they don't know where to go for trusted advice and support and information, and the internet's an amazing thing, but it's also incredibly overwhelming. And like, I've had so many conversations where people are like, I've googled it, and I'm just like, it's just too much. Like, they get so much information that they then actually don't know what to do. So it's like, yeah, okay, the internet is incredible, but actually any generation often just wants someone to say, okay, this is your situation, this is what you need to do, this is what will make it better, this is what will help you, this is what will improve what's going on right now. And everyone should be able to access that. So that's what's important for us.
Yeah, absolutely. I also wanted to ask, because we've talked about how this subscription-based model is good for clients. You know, it makes it more accessible. They can access financial planning without having all these assets. But what are the advantages for the advisor? Is it easier to make a profit through subscription-based? What kind of advantages does it carry for you specifically?
But I think there's absolutely no denying that there's obviously a reason why we've had percentage fees for such a long time. Like, at the end of the day, individuals can make a lot of money from a percentage fee. Like, we just can't, that there's no denying that. Everybody knows that. Like, if you, on certain cases, you take a percentage fee, you can make a serious amount of money on that. And obviously subscription is different to that. I think there's a bit of a misconception that individuals won't pay much for a subscription, and I don't believe that's true. I've got friends, I've done research, that will pay sometimes up to hundreds of pounds for subscriptions for whether it's coaches or a gym in London or CrossFit or all of these nutritionists, like all these different things. I've done research and had so many conversations that show these individuals, if they can see the value, they will pay it. So I think there's a bit of a misconception around there. It depends on so many things. It depends what you price it at, how efficiently you can run your business, and it will be different for every firm. For us, it obviously does come into the making it more accessible. That is the most important thing to us, and tying into our target market and how they can access financial planning. But I personally think it's something that people should consider and think about. And often as well, we mentioned fixed fees. Often they are in the form of a subscription, but they might not be worded as subscription, but sometimes a client will pay a monthly fixed fee, but like, that is a subscription. So it probably is also happening more than people think it is. But I personally think it's something that people should definitely think about and consider, because it does open you up to potentially new clients and different clients.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll go back to talking a bit more about how firms could kind of consider this model a bit later on. But I just wanted to talk a bit more about the about how to actually make advice more accessible, kind of beyond those fee structures. I know that you have a podcast, so I'm guessing that for you, the kind of education aspect of it and, you know, talking about finance and talking about all of this is also an important aspect. So, yeah, how do you think you can actually make finance more accessible?
Yeah, I think there's a few different things when it comes to that. The podcast bit for me, so my podcast, Her Future Bright, I basically started because when I joined the industry and I attended events, usually with my dad, I would be the only young woman in the room, like regularly. Often I'd be one of very few women anyway, but usually the only young woman. And it was really intimidating. Like, if it wasn't for my dad, like, I would have left those conferences because I would have done, like, I had somebody ask me once, like, if I was in the wrong place. And I was like, wow, like, yeah, honestly, I was like, nope, I'm pretty sure I'm at the right place. For me, I was just like, I could see why we weren't getting new people into the industry, because if it wasn't for my dad, I wouldn't be there. So as time went on, I spoke to individuals, I got mentors, all of those sorts of things. And I was having conversations with women in finance that were incredibly useful to me, and motivating and inspiring. And I just thought to myself, like, I'd love to be able to share this and let other people hear the kind of inspiration and motivation and wisdom, or whatever you want to call it, that I was hearing, to eventually have a knock-on effect to show how great this industry is and get some new people into it and build it as an industry profession, or whatever you want to call it. So that's what I did with the podcast, and I still do. So I interview women in finance and talk about their career, how they got to where they are, what they've overcome, what has been brilliant, what they've enjoyed, their top tips, all of these sorts of things. Because the other part of that is when I was working in financial services and saying I wanted to be a financial planner, I would often get told, like, you can't, like, you're a young woman, like, no one's gonna take you seriously. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and now in hindsight, I'm like, that's so silly, because I could have sat down with your client's children and talked to them, and you could have looked at a succession plan for the business and ensured that the whole family are involved. Like, I think it's really important, and this ties into the relatability aspect of,
yeah,
the children are probably more likely to sit down with me than they are as a 62-year-old man. And I honestly don't mean that badly, because, like, my dad is that 62-year-old man. Like, his clients absolutely love him, and, like, he's brilliant at his job. And I'm not saying they shouldn't be there, but it was really beneficial for me to sit down with the children and get them involved. Like,
yeah,
it brings in that relatability aspect. And then that then ties into making advice more accessible, because they feel like they can sit down with me and have a conversation, and that kind of stuff. So that part's really important, but also the social media side of things, where I've put myself online there and just shown that I'm a young female financial planner, like, it's just normalized it a bit. And that there's definitely more individuals doing that. I know we've spoken about it before. There's far more individuals now on Instagram and social media and TikTok talking about how they're kind of like a young financial planner. And but it just normalizes it. Like, people just see it and think, well, I could speak to them and have a conversation with them. Like, they're just like me. Like, so I could sit down with them and I wouldn't feel intimidated or uncomfortable. And I think if we keep doing stuff like that, it will become more accessible. I do think there's quite a long way to go, don't get me wrong, but I do think we are heading in the right direction, and it will make a difference, because the more people that can get advice and support, it's just such a big part of our life. Like, money and finances, like, it comes into everything. Like,
yeah,
your whole day when you think about it, like, ties into money one way or another. So to be able to get help and support with it, I just think's incredibly important.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that element of relatability is so important. You know, if I was right now to try and find a financial advisor, I would obviously go to someone who's younger. I would probably go to a woman as well, because there would be that kind of, you know, understanding of, you know, my needs and, you know, what I want, etc., that you probably wouldn't get with, you know, an older, even if it's a really good advisor, you probably wouldn't get that kind of, you know, that sort of relatability. So I think, yeah, it's very important. So who have you been interviewing then on your podcast? What are some of the highlights for you?
Yeah, no, oh God, I've had some amazing guests. I was incredibly lucky that my first guest was Ruth Hancock from Octopus CEO. That she just was incredible. So all the guests have been amazing, and what I try and do is also get women from different parts of the finance industry, especially industries that aren't talked about that much. And kind of, for example, investment managers. Like, I think that's quite like undercover. Like, when you ask somebody what an investment manager does, they think of things like Wolf of Wall Street, and it's kind of quite a blurred industry, and they don't really know what it actually involves. So I've had a couple of investment managers on, and accountants, and financial planners, and I just try and get a real range, and they just provide some incredible insight into what they do and how they overcome things. And I think one part of it that I really love is you just get an insight into what they do, and I think that's incredible for people coming into the industry that maybe are not quite sure on what path they're going to take yet, or even if they want to change paths, because there's so much movement in financial services that you can do, because they actually all tie in so well. But also the bit that's kind of most impactful, I think, is when they talk about their achievements and what they've overcome, and then what advice they would kind of give to somebody starting in their career now. Like, it amazes me, silly really, but like, they all come out with something so amazing and so different. But I suppose that's because they've all had their own personal experiences and different situations, and I feel so lucky to be able to do the interviews, because sometimes I forget that people even listen. Like, I enjoy recording it so much, and I take away so much that when I meet people and they're like, oh, I've listened to the podcast, I'm like, oh, that's weird, have you?
Have you?
It's like, it's so crazy. But even if it means like the individual listening reaches out to the person that's on the podcast and wants to have a chat, and then they become a mentor. Like, I just think it can make such a difference. And it's similar to, there's actually like so many amazing women in finance that when I started in the industry, I felt like I couldn't find them. And I felt like, because LinkedIn wasn't such a thing, I couldn't find these amazing women to speak to. So I think just opening the door, and again, it goes back to that relatability thing. Like, I will absolutely take advice and motivation into very inspiration of the amazing men that are in the industry as well. But it is also brilliant to listen to a woman that I can look up to and think, I can be like that in 10 years. Like, and especially like, imagine young women coming into the industry. Like, I just hope to think that they're listening, thinking the same thing. And I think it just all contributes to a positive future for financial services, really.
It's all about kind of demystifying this industry that's kind of really intimidating when you're not in it at all. So yeah, and it goes back again to making it accessible and kind of lifting the veil on the cogs of this like huge machine that not many people understand, right? But yeah, so just to go back then to this whole thing of making advice more accessible and the fee structure specifically. Within the context of consumer duty, I've been talking about consumer duty so much lately. I feel like that's just the main topic of conversation. But it asks firms to kind of think about their fee structure as well, and ensure that it's transparent and really understood by consumers. Do you think that as a result of consumer duty, subscription-based financial planning will become a bit more popular? Because at the moment, it's not really, one of the main models used.
It's not, it's definitely not. I think over time we're seeing more fixed fees become more popular, and I think Consumer Duty will probably push that. And I do think it, I'd like to think it will make a difference. I think it will, and I would really like to think it will make a difference, and potentially more individuals will at least consider fixed fees or subscription basis, whatever you want to call it, because at the end of the day, it is all about value and what the client is getting for their fees that they're paying. And we've all seen that with the percentage model, some may pay larger fees than others, even though the costs and benefits of providing that service may actually be very similar. And that has happened with percentage fees, and probably does happen quite a lot. And I think with fixed fees and subscriptions, it is very transparent what they're paying, and often it is put into groups of whether the complexity or whatever it is. So I think Consumer Duty will definitely push more companies into that direction. I hope, if anything, it just makes them think what else they can do. And if fixed fees or subscription is the right thing for them to do, then amazing. I do also think it's a massive change that will be quite a big change to a lot of firms to what they've done for a very long time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, because, you know, I'm wondering, you know, can it work for any firm? Can it be sort of implemented in businesses that have had their fee structure forever? Is there that kind of willingness to change, do you think?
Is there the willingness? I think there'll be a lot of firms that will be quite resistant to that change.
Yeah.
From the experience that I've had personally and the conversations that I've had talking about subscription basis and fixed fees, I think for them, in their eyes, percentage fees have worked for such a long time. And as we said before, they have made a lot of money. Like looking at that change for them is probably quite difficult. I think there will be some people in the industry that will see why this is so important, because it is so important. But I do think there'll be individuals that will say the percentage fees have always worked and they will carry on using them because they have always worked. And it's the same with everything I've talked about, this sort of advice for the next generation. And I've had many conversations where I've explained my thinking and my research and they said, well, what we've done has always worked. And it's like, yeah, it has. And like, often it does work well. And I'm not saying you're not needed. Like you have a fantastic business and you work with your clients well, and I'm sure they have huge value, but the world is moving forward and there is future clients that you need to think about, and your future and your business's future. And if you want to work with them, you're going to have to think a little bit differently. And I think this is where it all comes in. But for some individuals, I think there's a lot of firms that are super old school and have been the same way for a really long time, and they may not want to change, and it may work for them.
Yeah. I mean, it's not because something works well that there's no space for innovation, right? But I mean, you know, there's also always be more traditional businesses. But then as long as there's opportunities for other businesses to arise and to kind of change the way that things have always been done, then that's quite good. But yeah, how do you hope then the industry will evolve with regards to reducing the advice gap?
I have so much hope and faith in the future of financial services. Like, I love my job, and I love the difference we make for clients and the relief and like the difference you see in them. And that's what spurred me on to want to be able to help more individuals. And I definitely, like I said, like I can see a change, like more individuals are having this mindset of thinking about who they can help and what the future might look like and how they can do things differently. And I think there'll be a lot of trial and error, and like I think people will try things different ways and we'll all work out what works and what doesn't. But I think as long as we're moving forward, like that's the most important thing. I think we have quite a long way to go in many areas in financial services, but I really, especially in the last like sort of few years, I feel like I definitely have seen a massive difference, and lots of individuals who want to make change for the better, whether that's making advice more accessible or just in so many areas, technology, social media, marketing, how their clients pay their fees in every way. So I think that the future is exciting, and I think there's lots of individuals out there who are in the industry and want to make change and putting their heart and soul into making that change. So I have high hopes.
Really optimistic then, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens with Money Means, and you know, I'm sure that you'll keep me updated as to how it evolves and develops. But Chanel, thanks so much for being here, and thanks everybody for listening. If you'd like to hear Chanel speak to women in finance about their work and their vision for the industry, you can head to wherever you listen to podcasts and type in Her Future Bright. And if you'd like to get in touch with us about this episode, we're on Twitter at New Model Advisor, or you can get in touch with me directly if you so wish. I'm cmelly, M-E-L-E-Y, at citywire.co.uk. Thanks again, everyone. Thank you, Chanel, and we will see you next week.
This CityWire podcast is sponsored by Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust. Scottish Mortgage invests in some of the world's most promising and exceptional companies, from healthcare breakthroughs to electric vehicles to a green energy revolution. Scottish Mortgage takes stakes in businesses shaping our future economy and society. As with any investment, capital is at risk.